Example that's given of the king when he comes into the prison house, who's free to come and go at will, is not under the influence of the laws of nature, and so therefore obliged to act in a particular way. So when Krishna comes, he can even break the laws, apparently. But because he is the Supreme Personality of God, he's free to come and go at his own will. He's the law maker, actually.
Yeah.
And he's not. And I think there's that Narkana Gun that then he's able to do quite well. He says he's not affected by the actions and reactions of his own activities.
It's hard for us to understand because we see so many examples of people in high places who are corrupt, and they say, well, I can do it, or they try to get away with it because they have a good position. But this isn't the same. They are affected. They do something and they do get affected by it. But in every way, Krishna is not affected by breaking the conventions. And so by doing it, it's another testimony that he's Ishvara. Yes?
We say that, in the same vein, we say that, that Krishna is impartial. Yet he proved himself to be partial to his devotees, like when he picked up, when he was prepared to challenge Bhishma on the battlefield to protect Arjuna. And that's not described as a fault, it describes an ornament because he loves his devotees so much. So in this instance here, we can see it not as a divine fault, but as an ornament because Krishna loves his devotees so much.
Clear that one? Yeah. Does that go on? That's the end. There's a famous verse the Prabhupada sometimes quotes in this connection about the Ishvaras. The Lord Shiva could drink an ocean of poisons, but if you try to do something like that, take a little poison like marijuana or ganja, you'll be drawing death near. You cannot imitate what Lord Shiva does. Lord Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill. You can't do that. So don't imitate the Rasadin. The Ishvaras can do things that we cannot do.
Krishna's the Purusha, or Parampurusha, so he's the supreme proprietor and enjoyer. And all living entities are his prakriti, his energy or his property. So if he wants to enjoy some of his property in a certain way, and that's actually not just permissible, but it's right.
Yeah.
And whereas the husband, you know, they're thinking, this is my wife. What is Krishna doing? But they're actually the adulterers.
Yes. Yeah, I heard Prabhupada in conversation once use that argument very strongly against a man who challenged. It was in the Bhubaneswar, in the public meeting, and the man challenged, why does Krishna do this? And Prabhupada gave that argument back. Said, you're the one who's stealing the wives. They all belong to Krishna. Yes.
One of the reasons that Krishna comes is to raise his pastimes is to show and prove and establish his disposition. So following on what said, it's important that the conditioned souls can see that there's someone who is supreme, who is who can do these things purely.
Yeah.
They can find excuses to reject the principle of God with so many cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
And throw the baby out of the bathwater. But Krishna comes, and he shows it perfectly.
There's a testimony of how Krishna was not affected, given by Bhishma, who said that I'm a famous brahmachari, but I could not do what Krishna did and dance with all these beautiful girls and not be affected. Krishna's the real brahmachari. He said this at the Rajasuya sacrifice in praise of Krishna. Let's go on to the second explanation by Sukadeva. Those who become pure devotees of the Lord are free from the laws of karma. So how could Lord Krishna himself be under the bondage of material desire? Anyone want to elaborate on that? Well, one elaboration is the rasa dance is being told by Sukadeva Goswami, who is a staunch brahmachari. he would not be interested in talking about a lusty man with all his girlfriends in a harem. So this is the proof. He's free of sex desire. How could his worshipable Lord be a lusty person? Yes.
Also in the Atmanamrita verse, it explains that Krishna has transcendental qualities. So even people who are already liberated, they can become attractive.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And those who are already liberated. That's a good verse for backing this up. Another point on this. Another one is the example is even devotees become free of sex desire and who follow Krishna. So another example would be the gopis. Some of the gopis who are Vedas personified. It's the same thing. They did not practice austerities and wait for yugas to come to be with Krishna to have material pleasure. So therefore Krishna is not reciprocating for material, in material platform. Okay. Next, the third argument is there's a little bit what you were hinting at, Madhu, too. Your point overlapped. The Rasa Dance is Krishna's kindness to all souls, that he appears in these pastimes just to attract the conditioned souls. So this is, the question is, why is he doing this immoral thing? So now he's answering in a positive sense, not just saying why it's not material sex desire, but why he does do it. It's such a wonderful thing that he's doing. Don't accuse him of something wrong. By this rasa dance, he's not just enjoying himself, he's being kind to everybody, to attract them. And this will bring up again the other point of, who is eligible to hear this and be attracted? I never gave a comment that I meant to give about the contradiction between the warnings not to hear the rasa dance. Prabhupada sometimes says you shouldn't even dream of the rasa dance, or should not have the rasa dance. Think of the rasa dance, as long as you have material sex desire, stick to the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's a puzzle for some devotees. Does this mean we shouldn't read third canto, fourth canto? And so these strong statements are there. And then the very liberal statements that if you are interested in sex literature and these kind of things, you purify yourself by hearing the rasa dance. So one attempt to explain this is that the apparent contradiction can become cleared up when we consider again the prerequisites for hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we hear with a submissive attitude from an authorized representative of Parampara, then we can gradually prepare ourselves through the nine cantos to hear the tenth canto pastimes. Therefore, when those conditions are met, one should certainly hear the rasa dance, otherwise not. So it shouldn't be heard from a professional reciter who's just doing it to make money to people who aren't practicing Krishna consciousness. They just come like you go to a movie for some entertainment. They go to hear the rasa dance, and they go back to ordinary life. It's to be heard by devotees, but even practicing devotees can hear it. It's also not to be discussed publicly, but just among devotees. Well, there are a number of different conditions involved. You're becoming ready to hear. And we discussed in an earlier class, Prabhupada's famous talk, we have not taken a vow to boycott the gopis. Any more on this point? Yes?
Another question. Earlier on you mentioned simplicity. So I was wondering if simplicity like one of those prerequisites. Yeah. And so in that sense, what would that simplicity be?
Well, It means a kind of purity. A lot of sophistication has to do with sophistication about sexual dealings. So, I mean, it means just to take the scripture as it is, not to try to analyze it or doubt it, to be simple in that sense. Hearing from the guru with faith. These are some of the components of simple-hearted hearing of the rasa dance. It really means as far as possible, without intruding in that mentality. The big problem is that we have such a background of contamination in this lifetime and previous lifetimes. To explain this, Prabhupada told a story about a cow who was in the barn, and the cow, there was a fire in the barn, and the cow had a traumatic experience but didn't die. Now that cow, whenever it even sees the color red, it thinks, oh, the fire, and it has a panic. So Prabhupada says, in the same way, we have such an impression of sex, material sex, as soon as we see Krishna and the girl with Krishna, we think, oh, there it is. Same thing. And even if we're told, no, it's not the same thing. We can't get rid of that contamination. But, and actually, this is not a light thing. When we think about the sinful activities we've performed in this lifetime, even though we've given them up now, the impressions may remain and prevent us from appreciating rasa dance. And when we consider this, it should make us very unhappy. And if it makes us contrite enough, and we cry for this, about this contamination, then we may be relieved of it. But it's a great misfortune of ours. So simple would mean not having all these bad associations. But it's Prabhupada once said, you Westerners have a permanent disease of sex attraction. Sex attraction and fighting with one another. So, remember when he said that, it sounds so heavy, permanent disease. But still, although he was chastising and angry, Prabhupada didn't think it was futile, but that we could purify ourselves by chanting Hare Krishna and coming to this standard of hearing the Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. All right, the fourth point, this is like a detail, important detail. The criticism is, why is he touching other men's wives? The answer is, the gopis who danced with Krishna did so in their spiritual bodies, and their husbands thought that they were still sleeping by their sides. What does anyone know of other examples to clear the doubt of Maharaj Krishna? I just thought of one in the Krishna book. Prabhupada says that Krishna was 8 years old.
Yes. Another explanation that's given by Jiva Goswami is that the year that all the gopis were married was the year that Krishna expanded himself. It was all the coward boys. So actually even their so-called marriages to other boys or other men, they were actually married to Krishna because Krishna was expanded as those forms during that year. Jiva Goswami gives quite a few explanations of how Krishna is actually the real husband.
This is a point you can dwell on a little bit, because it's a little bit like this dilemma we are talking about of people, no matter what you say to them, they keep thinking of material sex. Once, unsolicited, somebody sent some books to the different ISKCON centers. It was 1968. Very advanced books, maybe Krishna Kanamrita and a few others. Somebody in India. So, Prabhupada happened to be in Boston, and I showed him the books that came in the mail. He said, oh, this isn't good. And then he gave an example. He said, it's like I see in the introduction to this book there are warnings that you shouldn't think of Krishna's activities as like ordinary sex. He says, yes, that's just like giving a child many warnings about how dangerous a razor blade is and then giving it to him. But still, he's a child. So, Jiva Goswami, way back then, 500 years ago, he was also concerned that people not misunderstand that Krishna was not ever married to the special gopi Radharani. So he has said that in some of his texts, he says that they were married. So it's not parakia. What is the word? Married? Svakia. So then in his... But he did this just to for these people who couldn't handle the parakia. Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti, in his commentaries, he says, I worship Jiva Goswami as my spiritual master. But then he proceeds to dismantle all the arguments. Jiva Goswami, he says, without any doubt, it's a parakia, because it's not a detail, but it's a very special essence of the rasa. He said, it's done at risk, it's not domestic affairs like husband and wife, but it's done with great risk, going out at night. So in the spiritual world, they think they're doing that, and to maintain that excitement of going to Krishna. And even sometimes there are mentions of little ceremonies. One time Lord Brahma performed a marriage of Radha and Krishna by tying their cloths together. And there's another instance like that. But the acharyas say, these are just like games. They were just in the forest. They say, all right, let's play a game that Radha and Krishna got married. But they never seriously got married. Prabhupada also in a purport, he says, there are some charges brought against Jiva Goswami falsely by the Sahajiyas and others. And one of the charges is that he supports Svakiya, but he doesn't actually. He supports Parakiya. But it's interesting that he goes to lengths to do this and put it in writing just to protect the sanctity and the purity of Radha Krishna affairs, so nobody will speak badly about it. So there's an internal meaning to things and an external. The external is for ordinary people.
The story also when Mother Yashoda arranged to Radharani to marry Krishna, and there was all exchange of stories between the parents, and the marriage was just about to happen, and Purnamasi stopped it to protect the Madhurya Rasa in Braj. Radha and Krishna couldn't get married in Braj. But she said astrologically it's not the right time to get married.
At the end of the Lalita Madhava, they get married to it. It's just a game. So these are some of the defenses.
One of the arguments used in the Krishna book is about the Adiyadi Pati. Krishna is the head of the Adiyadi Pati. They always recognize as being the most virtuous people. How prepared of the dynasty do you think they
are? Yeah, and at the beginning of Rasa Dance chapter, introduction, two words were Bhagavan Api and Yogamaya and Mapashi.
What's the Because the Gopi love Krishna from seeing the Yogamaya to get the relationship with the Lord. These men never actually had an intimate contact with the divine ladies of Radha. The gopis are the internal energy of the Lord and can never belong to any other living being. Krishna arranges apparent marriage to other men simply to create a statement of Parakita Rasa. The love between a married woman and her one more.
Yeah. So the marriage was Yoga Maya. Illusion. After an entire night of Brahma had passed, Lord Krishna advised the gopis to return home, and they did so reluctantly. That the night could be turned into such a long period is also the work of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the same Lord Krishna who could not be bound by the ropes of Yasoda and who showed the universal form in his mouth. So this is an example at the end of the chapter, just to remind us that it's all achintya. Unless you accept the inconceivable energies of Krishna, you can't understand Krishna. So this is completely out of place. How could Krishna touch another man's wife? His affairs are just all not to be questioned by ordinary morality. If you're going to ask a question like that, then say, how could the universe be in the mouth of Krishna? There are so many questions about Krishna. How could the night be so long? Shukadeva concludes the chapter. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Thus he will quickly become sober and conquer lust and lust, a disease of the heart. Even the benediction in the chapter has got nothing to do with it's not like an aphrodisiac chapter to increase your sex desire, but if you read this chapter you'll lose the whole thing, sex desire, and you'll gain not just a neutral state, but you'll gain pure devotional service. That's the effect of hearing the Rasa name. That's the blessing you get when you hear it nicely. And just to close, a nice statement by a devotee, realization he had about eligibility to hear the Rasa dance. I think, let me read this chapter at the end of a day or a week of distributing a lot of books. I want to do some Sankirtan for a good service. I know when I go out and do some preaching, it's like an automatic mystical blessing to hear and appreciate more. Just as when we hear about Guru Kripa, the spiritual master's mercy, how it pushes us. Because Krishna is unlimited, his lila is unlimited, it's very exalted, so we have to match up and put in our own surrender, and then by Krishna's will, we'll be able to hear it. Krishna says, unless you agree, you can't bind me. Well, that's a nice practical realization that in our own devotional lives, we can earn the right by tapasya, to hear these things with a clear mind. Let me do some service. Any other comments? Questions? All right. Tomorrow night is the deadline for the hearing and the exams.
If you don't mind, I'd like to go over the question.
Okay.
Since you get so many information tonight about the pros and cons, because after the meeting and getting so many explanations, it seems that there's only pros, so I'm a bit bewildered about the pros.
Oh. I didn't give so many examples. Well, if I give examples, it'll be to answer the question. But so there are, I assure you, there are arguments against hearing the Rasa dance. There are warnings against hearing. That was brought up tonight too, different things. About the example of the razor blade is a heavy thing. He may say, it's dangerous for this reason, it's dangerous for that reason, it's dangerous for this reason. But if he gives it to you, that's not good. So that's like sounds like it's forbidden to talk. So there, and the example of the cow and the red shows that no matter what you say, you're going to think of it as sex desire. So if you think of all these sort of negative injunctions and stack them up, there are statements, I didn't read any, but will seem to indicate that you have to be liberated. So, I think you can find some in here, in this chapter, the Rasa Dance chapter, you'll find some. But it's not absolute, that's the point. There are warnings certain people, or in certain ways, it shouldn't be done. Therefore, it's not like a real contradiction. It's an apparent contradiction. You have to work it out. Yeah.
Is there anything to do like with if someone is mature by age, then you could listen to transcendence without having so many?
No.
That someone is only like 16 years old and all this lost in mind, and he didn't
know. No, there's no difference. He may get more physically aroused when he's 16, but the old man can get aroused in his mind. You know that story about the Akbar? He has one sex desire, and not until the deathbed, he still looks at the young girl. So physically he couldn't enjoy that girl, but he preferred to see her with his last look. So that doesn't make much difference. Don't expect that by growing old you'll become pure. But by concentration of consciousness, you can be pure even when you're 16. Thank you. All those are cool.